Welcome to the World of Women Create podcast series, where we bring you the magical and innovative worlds of artisans and makers from the pages of our magazines, Where Women Create and What Women Create, along with special guests who are entrepreneurs and experts in their fields. We love to share great conversation with extraordinary women, women you may be very familiar with and others you may not know. My name is Jennifer Blott, and I am the editor-in-chief of Women Create. It is my pleasure to welcome you, our listeners, and all of our guests as we explore the ups and downs, challenges and triumphs, exhilaration and immense joy of living a creative life. A creative life is a life that's rarely stagnant and always leading us down surprising paths. Thank you for being part of our creative world, the world of Women Create. I am thrilled to be here today with Sarah Lawson. Sarah is a sewing pattern designer from Chicago who started her company Sew Sweetness in 2013. Sarah specializes in bag and accessory patterns and also presents these projects in easy-to-follow, full-length instructional videos. You may already be familiar with Sarah. She has a very popular live show on Facebook and YouTube called Social Sunday, and also happens to be our Art of Business story in our Spring 2024 issue of What Women Create. The issue has just landed at newsstands, and we were thrilled Sarah made time in her schedule to connect with us today. Hi, Sarah. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited to join you today.
I have so many questions for you, first of all, but one of the things I want to start with is this idea that you've been sewing for a very long time. You started when you were, I believe, third grade, and you grew up with a mom and a grandma who also sewed. And I just would love to know about your earliest days making your own creations and what you were thinking back then about your future.
I think I just have always been really creative and like a hands-on type of person. And throughout the years, like whatever handcrafts that I worked on, like there would always be some sort of a break. But I find that I always come back to everything, like sewing or, you know, when I was younger, you know, horseback riding, like certainly having kids, there's just like a natural kind of lull as you're taking care of the family and some of the other things you have to put to the side for a certain period of time. But I feel like somehow I always come back to it. And sewing is definitely one of those things too.
In your story, you mentioned that when your daughter was a baby, you began sewing again. You started making her garments and then you just sort of really got into it all over again.
Yeah, I found that when my kids were really little, watching Netflix every night got old really quickly. So that was the time that I came back to sewing. And it started off as just something to keep my mind occupied. I had a friend at the time who had a blog, and every Friday, she would open up her blog where people could upload photos of their finished makes for the week. And so I would always be trying to finish a new project to post on that Friday morning. And it just became like a habit. Work on a new project every week, post it every Friday. And I found that for whatever reason, bag making really drew me in. And really, I was just doing it for fun. I started a relationship with Pellon Interfacings really early on in my career, and writing free patterns for their website really sparked my creativity. And I just wanted to do more and more and more.
Now, how many different bag patterns have you designed in your career?
If I had to, I'm not counting, but if I had to guess, I would say maybe close to 200 between like magazines and, you know, free projects and, you know, the patterns that I have for sale on my website.
And these are just bags. We're talking about tote bags, purses, fanny packs, little clutch bags, just bags.
Yeah, bags or pouches. I would categorize pouches with that too.
Wow. I feel like there's something, you're really also very much connected to function and making sure it's not only pretty, but that it serves its purpose and that you can use it. And tell me about this. Tell me about your quality control process and how you basically check to make sure that the bag is going to function the way you want it to.
That's a good question. I'm thinking back to a recent bag that I designed that's been released by now, but I made a couple different iterations, and just like the way that the strap was connected to the bag, it looked really great. But once the bag was put on a person's shoulder, it sort of tipped forward a little bit. So part of that is just over the years, I guess I just have my mind on certain things that work and certain things that don't. Certainly my pattern testers help a lot with that, just because I would consider I have a large tester group and a lot of people test each pattern. And I ask for their feedback on all of every single step. I ask certain questions in a step, like for instance, if there's a process that I'm not sure if what I've come up with is a good option or not, I'll ask that in the pattern. And a lot of them give me thoughts about the bag after they've made it as far as like usability.
Okay. You mentioned your testers in your story. I would love for you to describe this, how it came about. How many testers do you have? What is the process for sending the materials to them? How long does it take them to get back to you with their input? And how do you make it all come together at the end?
I have a really flexible outlook to testing. I have over 100 people in my group, and I basically just leave it up to them, because obviously not every project is going to be to each person's taste, or they might not have time at that point in time. But the testing period is usually 3 weeks long. Because I'm flexible, if someone wants to make a small modification, like adding a zipper pocket, I don't really see that as a negative, as long as the rest of the bag is generally following the instructions. And I'm generally testing either 4 or 12 patterns at once. What I mean by at once, I don't mean like I post all, say, 4 patterns and there's 3 weeks total. I'll sort of do one at a time. So I'll post one, they get 3 weeks to make it. In the meantime, I'm working on the next pattern. And then when that one's ready, I'll post it to the group as well. Just because I generally release my patterns in either groups of 4 or 12. It's been a lot of years since I've released like just a single pattern at once.
So you're so prolific. I mean, you are constantly coming up with new ideas for how to create new bags and pouches. I mean, I know bags are one of those things that most of us have multiple bags in our closet, but tell me how the ideas come.
You know, I credit my customers for a lot of the ideas, because I get a lot of emails with suggestions for a particular type of bag. And I feel like over the years, I've gone through so many of the customer suggestions. Like I keep a spreadsheet in Google Sheets. And when I get recommendations of things that interest me, then I add them to the sheet. And a lot of times the suggestions are for things that I wouldn't necessarily use myself, but I see the value in the idea. And so I'll add those ideas to the spreadsheet, like yoga bags, casserole dish carriers. Not that I consider bags necessarily feminine, but you know, certainly sometimes I get suggestions for bags that could be more, I guess, gender neutral, like messenger bags, things like that. So, and I guess just things that I see out and about that interest me, like a certain feature of a bag. I really am intrigued by convertible bags, like a bag that could be a shoulder bag as well as a backpack. So I feel like there's really unlimited ideas out there for bags and other smaller accessories.
Well, I also think you must possess a real, almost an engineering problem-solving kind of mind. And in fact, somebody called you a fabric engineer wizard.
Oh, really?
This was a big compliment. Someone who was absolutely overwhelmed by your creativity and your ability to problem solve. So you must have patience. You must be able to sort of be very meticulous and work through the problems and sort of see them through completion, correct?
I appreciate that compliment. I definitely think that I can look at a project and my mind already starts working in reverse of like how it could be put together. And I think certainly in later years, I think it's gotten better, because in the earlier years of designing, I don't want to say rushing to finish the design, but I definitely, the adrenaline was pumping and I just wanted to keep working on it until it was finished. And in the later years, I find that if I slow down and like sort of alternate life with work, it almost makes the designs better, because I have time to let my mind rest. And while it's resting, just things kind of pop up in my brain of either a solution to a problem that I was having or sort of an aspect that I can make the design better. So I find that when I'm not actively thinking about the design, answers to some of the problems sort of just come to me.
I want to talk to you about the fact that you have built a family business. I love it in your story when you talk about a turning point in 2017, when your husband, Danny, came on board to do all of your videography. And you even mentioned that your parents help out from time to time and your kids help out. How does that all work? Are you in an off-site location away from the home?
For a lot of years, we were actually working out of the home. The last few years, we have a small commercial space. And so my parents work 3 to 5 days a week, depending on the order volume they process and pack the orders. My kids help as well. My husband, Danny, actually didn't know anything about filming or editing before he started working for me. So I credit him because that was a huge learning process, figuring out the software and the live streaming and all that. So it really is a group effort. And I certainly could have continued designing patterns on my own, but I feel like having the video and the support from my parents and my kids also help kind of round out the business and make it kind of like a one-stop shop. They can get the pattern, the hardware, the zippers, interfacings, all the supplies on our website if they choose to do that.
And then you also have another, you have a team, a few other people helping you, correct?
Mm-hmm. They're all remote, but they definitely give me a lot of support in running certain aspects like social media, Facebook group, photography, those kinds of things.
And in the beginning, you did it all yourself.
Yeah, I've done, you know, over the years, every single aspect of the business, I've done myself at one time or the other. So if, for example, you know, when my parents go on vacation, me and Danny are, you know, packing orders. I've done social media. I've done everything I've done myself at one time.
Okay, so let's talk about Social Sundays. I want to know about the process, how long you've been doing these videos, how many people come. You also mentioned in your story that people will show up early just to connect with each other. Tell me about this.
We've been doing the shows since 2017, and over the years, the schedule has been different. We always had the Social Sunday shows. Those are Sundays at 7 o'clock Central Time. Over the years, sometimes we've had, we used to have a Tuesday show as well, also a Friday show. The Sunday show used to be every Sunday. And at the end of 2023, I changed it to once a month just because I felt like having the show every week was taking up a lot of my creative energy. And I wanted to put more of that into designing patterns because that's the thing I love the most. But I still wanted to keep the show because I feel like I really appreciate that relationship with our viewers. And like you mentioned, most of them get on the show up to an hour before the show starts and they'll be chatting in the comments. I feel like that happens more on YouTube compared to Facebook. I really like people checking in with each other, asking how they're doing by certain name. I just really like the camaraderie of seeing that kind of chat before the show actually starts.
And do you have to have experience to embark on creating one of your bags? Is there something that somebody with little to no experience can start with and do by following one of the instructional videos?
Oh, that's a good question. I highly recommend the Baker Street bag for a beginning bag maker. It's a free pattern and a free video, and it gives the sewist an opportunity to work with, for example, sewing through a curve. They'll be installing a zipper, making straps. And I feel like with the videos, a lot of the projects are accessible regardless of skill level. I feel like a confident beginner would be able to make most of my projects if they're able to follow along with the video and just break it up into sections. Like my patterns are broken up into sections, for example, make the zipper pocket or make the strap. And I feel like if you just, for the day, just focus on the one section. And then when you finish the section, just, you know, stop for the day, give yourself a pat on the back, and then maybe the next day move on to the next section. I feel like that's a good plan for not getting overwhelmed, especially if in your sewing day, sewn through, say, like 30 of the steps. Some steps might be a little bit of a challenge, but if you just stick with like one section at a time, I feel like it's really manageable. And I feel like that's a good plan to keep the stress level lower.
And you called that introductory bag the Baker Street bag?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And what does the name come from?
It's been a lot of years for that one, so I don't remember, but I often name patterns after street signs where we've lived, song titles of songs that I enjoy, different birds, different plants. I'm really into native plants. I live in Illinois, so I'm really into plants that are specifically native to Illinois. And so lately I've been naming some pattern titles after different plant names.
And you also wrote two books. Where can people find those books? Do you have them on your website?
The books are actually out of print. The first book was called Big City Bags, and the second book was called Windy City Bags. And actually, my publisher has since gone out of business. So you would have to find one secondhand somewhere or at your local library.
And did you write the books before you transitioned to video?
I did, yeah.
Okay, let's talk about video. Why is it important? Why has that become sort of a way for makers to instruct others and form a community?
Well, first, as far as pattern instructions go, I feel like, well, obviously the pattern should be able to stand alone without the video, but I've found that a lot of people are visual learners, and having the video to fall back on is extremely important. I guess I didn't realize how important it was until this year I learned how to crochet, and I purchased a kit that came with a video where every single step of it was a granny square blanket. Every single step of each of the granny squares was stitched completely on video. And I 100% know that I wouldn't have been able to get through the pattern instructions without having the video available to me. And since then, I've been able to transition to crochet patterns with no video, just from a book I've been working from. And because of that earlier confidence that I got from sewing with a video or stitching with a video instruction, I was able to learn new stitches, kind of expand my toolbox as far as crochet goes. And so now I fully understand why people find the video so important, because if you don't already know the skills, it can be challenging only going from a written instruction where you might not know some of the skills or you haven't completed them in the past. And so I find the fact that we're able to film a video, a full-length video for each of my patterns. And in the videos, we don't fast forward anything. I don't skip any instructions. I literally sew the whole project on camera. So I have three different views, but in the actual instruction, I use an overhead view, which is a camera shooting down to my work table where I will cut things out, iron things, pin them together, and explain the process. And then we move over to the sewing machine and I sew the actual step on the sewing machine. And like I mentioned, we don't fast forward that. You just see exactly how I sew it. And a lot of customers have let me know in the past that they found it helpful to see me sew things, because I do certain things with my hands or fingers that, while I do explain things as I'm doing them, some of the things they just find it helpful to see actually like how I hold the fabric or how I feed it into the machine. And obviously those kinds of things you would not get from a written instruction, just because, you know, that would be overlong. So the video side of the sewing patterns is really important. And also I find the video, the live stream show, very important as well for connecting to customers. There's so many customers that have been with me since the very beginning of the live shows. I know them by name. I know their pictures when it pops up on the screen. I do live question and answer. My husband, you know, posts the actual question on the screen and I see their name and their avatar. And there's so many questions that go on the screen where it's, you know, it's sort of like a happy light bulb in my mind. I'm like, you know, I recognize their name and their face, and it's kind of like we're all friends. It's just a really great feeling to have their support. They always say kind things during the show, and we've worked really hard so that our community is supportive and not critical or mean. I feel like a lot of things on the internet these days are just people criticizing others, putting people down. And I don't know if it's partly example or just partly the types of people that we like to encourage in the group or that watch the shows, but everyone's really nice. I would be hard pressed to find comments in our Facebook group and on the show of people that are just rude or short with each other. It's just not, knock on wood, something that I really find in our group. And I'm really thankful to all the members for making that possible.
When you mentioned that kindness is something that's incredibly important to you and just the way you walk through your life.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds to me like the people who are in your community are very, very grateful to have you in their lives and to learn from you and to be part of something really special.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think it is really special because I think it's when you feel supported, it makes learning fun. And I think we're all here to learn new skills. Even myself, for sewing bags, I'm learning things constantly from either customers or in my pattern tester group. Literally, the last set of new patterns that I came out with, I learned a few new skills based on recommendations from pattern testers. So those are the kinds of things that make you want to keep sewing, make you want to keep going, making new projects. For me as a designer, make me want to keep designing. When it becomes not fun anymore, it's, I don't know that I would be able to continue on designing if it wasn't fun for me.
So what are your goals with crochet? What are some of the things you're hoping to make in the future?
Well, I'm working on a blanket right now. I'm about halfway done. And I like crochet because I work on it in bed while I'm watching TV at night. And it lets me continue the creative process basically like all my waking hours. Like during the day, I can work on new sewing patterns or things for the business. And at night, I can still be creative in a different way, in a more relaxing way. I'm not standing up or at the sewing machine. It just lets the creativity continue, I guess.
And what do you do in your spare time, if you have any? What do you do for fun?
Well, I like playing games with the family. I have a horse, so I ride my horse 4 or 5 days a week. And I love that because it's really challenging for me. And my horse is a challenging horse, so it's good keeping my mind working. I feel like my mind is working in various ways all throughout the day, which I really enjoy.
So when you say your horse is a challenging horse, give us an example.
She's my first horse, so I would say nobody would say she's a beginner or someone's first horse, that kind of horse. So I really have to extend myself beyond my comfort level. She used to be a racehorse. She's always very quick, and it's kind of like a give and take with her. We do jumping. It's working with her in her mood for that particular day. Obviously people have different moods as well. And with my horse, I never know what her mood's going to be that day. And I have to tailor my ride to what exactly that is. So it's challenging, but it's fun and it's really fulfilling. And I feel like she's a one person horse. And I feel like our relationship is super strong just because of all the struggles we've had to go through the past few years, definitely.
And you're an animal person.
I have a dog. I have a standard poodle named Mikey, and I have a bearded dragon named Flash. And I am just so empathetic toward animals. And in addition to my family, like I really put a lot of time into each of my animals as well.
So you have kids who are in school still. Are they creative like you?
They're both creative in different ways. My son William is very practical. He plays a card game called Yu-Gi-Oh! And he's actually going to nationals this summer. So he's worked really hard at that. And it's a very strategic type of game. My daughter is very artistic. She rides horses with me also. She likes doing different handcrafts. Like she sews a bit with her friends. She likes painting and drawing. She's a creative writer as well. And I feel like my kids are both copies of sort of my husband. My son's a good copy of my husband, and my daughter's a good copy of me as far as our interests and the things that we like to do.
And does she weigh in on the bags? Does she have certain designs that she wants you to make for her or certain words of wisdom for you?
It's funny because her most recent bag, she found it on TikTok, and it was pattern designer that was new to me, but she bought the pattern on Etsy and she made it all by herself. And so far she's not interested in sewing one of my designs, which is okay. But I just find it a little funny.
I love it. So I have a teenage daughter as well, and I collect vintage jewelry, and I have lots of fabulous vintage jewelry pieces, costume jewelry, fun pieces. She will go to the mall. She will go to a place like Claire's and buy brand new, non-interesting pieces of jewelry when right here, I've got all kinds of great stuff for her. So, but you know, chances are they will possibly come around. So,
Yeah.
So how about in-person events? Do you do in-person workshops or courses at conferences?
You know, I used to go to trade shows. I went to a quilt market, I think for about 7 years. I taught in person for a lot of years to quilt shops and quilt guilds. And when we started doing video, that's when I started scaling it back. Obviously, like we only have so much time in the day. And I just felt that I could be of better service to more people if we really focused hard on the video and the live shows.
Well, and that actually brings me to something else I've been thinking about. When I meet someone like you who is juggling so many things and has such an amazing process and quality control, how do you manage your time? Do you have any words of wisdom for someone? I feel that in order to do all the things you do, you must be very, very organized and mindful of your time?
I wish I had a solution for that. I feel like I am not actually good at managing my time. I feel like the way things worked early in my career was I would just fill in work any time of the day. When my kids especially were really little, I'd put them to bed. I'd usually fall asleep in the bed with them, and I would set an alarm on my phone to wake me up at, say, for instance, 10 o'clock. So I could get up at 10 o'clock, work till midnight or 1 in the morning. I would just fit in work every empty period of the day at the beginning. I don't think I could do that now. I like to go to bed early. I enjoy getting 8 hours of sleep at night. I feel like my schedule now is definitely more healthy than it was, 10 years ago. But obviously at the beginning, you just have to put 200% in. And I feel like that's what I did. But now I think it's healthier for my brain to have a more varied schedule, like with the crochet and the horseback riding and spending time with the family. I just have different things filled in. Obviously, when the kids are in school, that's work time. But when they're out of school, I'm generally not working for the rest of the day.
Well, and I love how you said earlier that often if you're working through a problem or working through a pattern, you stop and you might be out doing something and the answer comes to you. And I'm guessing answers come to you when you're on the horse and doing other things.
Exactly. Yeah.
Do you have a little notebook or a note on your phone where you put it in, or do you?
I have notebooks all throughout the house, and just any available notebook, I'll just write it down just so I have it for when I'm ready to work on the pattern next. But like you said, the thoughts just come to you, or in the middle of the night, I'll just wake up with like an aha moment, like, oh, I know what to do now with that pattern.
And do you remember it? Because sometimes I have the aha moments. I don't write them down. And by the time I wake up in the morning, I've forgotten it.
I remember it just because whenever that happens, I'm usually awake for 2 or 3 hours after that. And I'm just like formulating constantly in my mind, like walking through like exactly what I'm going to do in that pattern with that particular problem. So it's not like a brief wake up and then I fall back asleep. My brain's ready to work at that point, I think.
The idea has woken you up and you have to work. Mm-hmm. It. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think of your community and in your story, when you talked about how important customer service is, I'm guessing you get all kinds of emails, all kinds of people reaching out to you. How do you manage the communication flow?
So for the emails, Bronwyn helps me answer emails. Obviously, if it's an email that was personally addressed to me, such as sometimes people send in like a photograph of a project that they made and they were really proud and they just wanted me to see it. Obviously, emails like that, I answer personally myself. If it's something Bronwyn can help, then she'll answer that just to get the reply out quickly. And she lives in New Zealand, so we're on completely opposite time zones, which is helpful so that we can get replies to emails done quicker. Bronwyn was a customer at the beginning, and she found my business through an Instagram ad, which I thought is pretty interesting. And she just was always making more and more projects. It's definitely helpful to have someone assisting with email that has made a vast majority of the sewing patterns because, she knows the answers to a lot of things. Yeah, we just do our best to get the replies to emails out there. And Michelle Graham helps in the Facebook group, admin answering questions over on Facebook. So between emails and the Facebook group, those are two great ways to get answers to any questions. And the great thing about the Facebook group is that all of the members are happy to help answer questions too. So if someone has, say, a problem with tension on their sewing machine or they're stuck on a certain step in the pattern, a lot of people are willing and able to help in the Facebook group too. And that's really nice.
So they have dialogue amongst each other and they all go back and forth. Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Instagram, do you do anything? Do you get a lot of DMs, people asking you questions, or you try to move everyone over to Facebook because that's a better forum for the customer service?
I prefer people to either email, or if it's just a general question that they don't necessarily need me specifically to answer, over in the Facebook group. I actually have I don't know if this is right or wrong, but on Instagram and on our Facebook page, we have an automated message asking for people if they need help to email directly, because I just feel like for me personally, it's really difficult to keep track of all of these different places where people might send messages. And I feel like the best way to guarantee that they get a reply from me or from either Michelle or Bronwyn is to either email or in the Facebook group. If it's a problem that they need help with, honestly, I prefer just email, just to make sure we answer every single email. And that's the best way to guarantee that everyone gets helped and gets a reply.
And you have a newsletter. How often does that come out?
We send it out twice a month, and we try to coordinate it with when the live show is, because the live show is the first, now it's currently the first Sunday of every month. And so we send out a newsletter on that particular day, because that serves as a reminder, hey, we're going live today. This is the day, because it used to be every Sunday. That used to be easier for people to keep track. But because it's only once a month now, the newsletter serves as a reminder. And then we have kind of like a mid-month newsletter with just general sewing things. We have a challenge every month. And so some of those things we use to notify people in the newsletter.
So give me an example of one of the challenges.
Currently, the challenge is two-part. So for instance, this month's challenge is to make either a particular sewing pattern of mine. This month is the yoga bag. And the second part of the challenge is to make a sew sweetness project with a solid fabric, either like a quilting cotton or waxed canvas. And so they choose either one of those challenges, make the project, and then they upload their photo to my blog, to a designated blog post that month. This month, there's two randomly drawn winners. So I just input that into random.org, and then each of the two winners get a prize. This month, it's $50 gift certificates. And so I think the challenges are really fun because it gives people sort of an assignment or task to work through that month. And yeah, I just think it's a lot of fun, and it's kind of a community builder as well.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And people love having a call to action with a deadline. Tell me all of the different things you offer on your website. Beyond patterns, you offer fabrics and tools and accessories, correct? Tell us what you offer.
Okay, so we have hardware in six different finishes and pretty much everything that might be used in any of my patterns. I sell zippers and zipper by the yard. The zipper by the yard has been really fun because the customer chooses their own zipper pull and puts the pull on themselves. And so at this point, we have over 100 different styles of zipper pulls, dogs, cats, flowers, butterflies, like all sorts of different designs. Those have been extremely popular. Interfacing, I have also tons of different notions, because I feel like having different tools makes sewing fun and easier in some instances. So the notions are really popular. I sell acrylic templates to go along with some of my sewing patterns. Those are optional because we do have the printable pattern pieces, but some people like having the acrylic templates, especially if they're making the project many times, such as for craft fairs, or if they're making gifts for the holidays. The acrylic templates makes the process a little bit faster. And then we also sell bag packs, which are curated bundles of two different cuts of fabrics, 1 yard each, and just something that I've put together where I envision one of the fabrics maybe for the exterior of the bag and one fabric for the lining, just to make things a little bit easier. I'm personally a big fan of buying kits just because I like to kind of know ahead of time what the project might look like, and just to be able to buy it without having to think too much to search for different fabrics. And so we have the backpack section on the website as well. That's kind of a newer, about 1 year old section. And I'm definitely trying to build that up with new fabrics every month. And those have been pretty popular as well.
So you provide all of the supplies and patterns for someone to make their own bag, but you don't ever sell completed bags that you have created.
That's true. I've actually never sold one of my bags, although a lot of my customers sell bags at craft fairs or online, like such as an Etsy store. I know the bags look perfectly fine. I just feel a little self-conscious.
Wow. Yeah. Well, you provide the framework for other people to do it.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, do people spread the word? I mean, it feels like it's a collaboration. They do the work, but really you're the one who created the design and the pattern. Right. So does it feel like they're doing this with you?
I think that's a great way to put it. I do think it's a collaboration, because there's so many finished bags that I see posted either on Instagram or in our Facebook group that I think, wow, like just the creativity, like even just selecting the fabrics they've selected or making different modifications. Actually, a really important segment of my live shows is a segment that we call Bag Lab. And in that segment, a lot of the times I demonstrate a technique that I've made sort of like into a generic technique. For instance, how to add a zipper overlay to a zipper pocket so that you can add that to any bag. And I sort of try to make the instructions kind of on the generic side. So if they need, for instance, like a longer zipper pocket or a shorter zipper pocket, they can still use my instructions and adapt it to whatever they're making. Or say, for instance, if they want to add a side elastic pocket to a backpack for a water bottle. So I have a bag lab for doing something like that. And just because I've made it generic, it's something that can be applied to many different bags, not just a specific one. And so I really am thrilled when I see people make modifications to one of my patterns, or just to see the fabric and the hardware selections. And each bag is really individual and unique. And it started off from one of my sewing patterns, but it just really turned into something else that's like completely amazing on their own. And it's something that someone else made. And it's a really big thrill for me to see all the finished bags and the pouches made.
I love it. I love the whole spirit of community you have with, with your customers. You know, they're customers, but really they're collaborators and maybe even friends and supporters.
Yes.
You know? And do you ever find yourself in a place where you get to meet someone in person that you've only known through your Facebook videos or through social media?
There's so many people over the years, over the past 10 years, that I've met in person. Some of them are, I would consider, either my best friends or my very good friends. And it's so funny. One of my pattern testers from my very first pattern 10 years ago, I didn't know she lived locally to me, but a few years in, I found out that she did. She lives about 40 minutes away from me, and her name's Vanessa. She's my best friend, and you know, we met through sewing, and it just felt so unexpected to meet someone that way, meet someone online and just be so close. And it's just, there's so many other friends like that. My friend Tamara, my friend Charlie, people that I value and just appreciate them being in my life.
That's a great story. Mm-hmm. We always like to end the podcast by posing a question. And that is, if you were to have a dinner party with five creative individuals, living or dead, who would they be?
I don't listen to a lot of podcasts, but there's a few that I listen to. And my favorite one is called Armchair Expert. And one of the hosts is Dax Shepard. And I feel like I just really love how he talks to other people in the interviews on the show. And he just seems really smart to me. He's one of them. Another favorite podcast of mine is, the host's name is Malcolm Gladwell. Also a big fan of his writing. And I've been going to therapy for about 6 or 7 years. And through therapy, I've found the Stoic line of thought. And so Marcus Aurelius is someone I've talked about with my therapist and, you know, through reading his book. And I just really love, without making this into a big novel, I just really love the thought of being present and appreciating things as they're happening, because you might not ever get to experience them again. For instance, there's going to be a time when you'll play a game of hopscotch for the last time. One day there will be a time when you'll fly on an airplane for the last time. And I feel like keeping those kinds of things in mind makes you appreciate them all the more, rather than just letting them pass you by and then having to think about them as memories. I feel like it's better to experience things and enjoy them as they're happening. So I feel like those three are really great people to have, that I'd like to have dinner with.
I love it. Well, thank you. It has been wonderful to talk with you today. It was wonderful having you in the issue. It's just out at newsstands. So I hope lots of people become acquainted with the great work you do and your community. Where should someone go if they want to join the Facebook group?
If you go to Facebook and search So Sweetness Fans, the group should pop up. And all the social media links are on my website, sosweetness.com. So you can find everything there as well, including information on the live shows.
Well, thank you so much, Sarah. I am thrilled to have had time with you today. As always, I leave the podcast feeling really inspired. So thank you. And I wish
you. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thank you again for joining us today for our World of Women Create podcast. In a world filled with endless stories, it is our mission to share the memorable personal journeys and lessons learned of the extraordinary women in our community. Their stories are stories that enlighten us, inform us, and ignite the creativity that lives in each of us. Women Create is grateful that you are part of our creative world.